The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, however you're taking us in. We appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Wyatt Tomchek, day number two. In for the vacationing Kelly Bidlin. How you doing, man?
Good, good. I was able to still wake up pretty nice today. Wasn't a struggle, but wait. Talk to me on Thursday or Friday.
Oh, four little days of this, and it might be the end for you on the waking up early.
I'm not a morning person. I've never been.
By the way, we've tracked Kelly like we track Santa Claus. Kelly is back from Austin. It went okay. He is in Vegas. Now he is headed to Los Angeles. So, again, the Kelly Bidlin low jack in full effect. He's all over the place. Have a good time, though.
Frequent flyer miles are being used very well.
7 a.m. weather check here, Pacific time in Las Vegas. Temperature 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Is that healthy? Oh, at 7 a.m.
So I saw a tweet yesterday, and I was thinking about you, and also I was crying about it. So the National Weather Service in Las Vegas said it was the first 23 days we were on par to have the hottest June ever compared to last year. 11 degrees hotter.
I feel every degree of it.
Mike, I walk out, I'm like, I have to blast the AC in my car full in the morning.
95 degrees weather in San Francisco right now. 58 degrees, just as a contrast. Hottest and coldest in the country. We have a show today, a good one. Drew Didzik joins us momentarily to talk NBA draft with us as our continuing coverage of the NBA draft, which, of course, commences tomorrow night, is happening. Drew's thoughts on that and beyond tennis, Olympics, who knows what else he's doing. John Legesa, instant offense and some baseball. Paul Spohr will be here to talk baseball. Paul Carr's got a bunch of Euro thoughts as well. Euros 2024. A whole bunch of soccer plays today, so we'll get into all of that. But first, Wyatt, Stanley Cup Final Game 7. Congratulations to the Florida Panthers. Congratulations to everybody who had Florida Panthers tickets. They get her done as a tick of a favorite last night. Minus 112, they win it 2-1, beating the Edmonton Oilers. So Canada still on the drought since 1993. And the Oilers do not make history for the fifth time in NHL history. What would have been the fifth time in NHL history, coming back from a 3-0 deficit to win a best-of-seven series. By the way, the complete stats on that from sport to sport now, in terms of teams down 3-0 trying to win a best-of-seven series, famously in the NBA, 0-157 in attempting to do that. 1-39 in Major League Baseball. Only the Red Sox doing it against the Yankees in the 2004 American League Championship Series, the only one to accomplish that feat. And it remains now stuck on 4-207 now. 4-207 in the history of the NHL. But the Panthers did it. It was a frenetic first period that was pretty awesome in both directions. The first salvo of this game coming from Carter Verhaeghe, really on the redirect. It was an Evan Rodriguez shot that Verhaeghe looked like it was going to be about 3 feet wide of the net, and Verhaeghe redirected it past Stuart Skinner. Panthers up 1-0, and a little more than 2 minutes later, then the Panthers out of position on defense. Great pass by Cody Ceci down the ice, all the way to Matthias Janmark, tied it up. That would be the score in the first intermission. Second period, what proved to be the game winner. Again, just defense that sort of should have picked up Sam Reinhart at the blue line. They backed up. Reinhart got himself some space, and it got by Skinner. And that would prove to be all the scoring. That would hold the rest of the way. Panthers win it 2-1 as the game falls comfortably under. And the big – oh, yes, you were going to say –
Well, I was going to say, also, after that first period, it felt like the over was going to hit easily.
Sure
did. The way both those teams are playing. But that game-winning goal, if you remember about like 20 seconds earlier, it was a loose puck in front of the net.
Yes.
It's amazing hockey. It's like, it's right there. Somebody just got to tap it in. And just the heads-up play by Florida, next thing you know. And it was kind of, they were saying on the broadcast, kind of a soft goal that Skinner gave up. But like said, also that the defense kind of just let the guy walk up and
got space. Things happen. No, you're so right. Basically, what hockey happened, right? A near miss on one end, and then what proved to be the game winner on the other. So at the first intermission, after the first period, I text Felica and Will Hill, and I go, isn't this going to be great when Connor McDavid wins the Conn Smythe without doing anything in Game 7? He hadn't done anything in Game 6 either. That proved to be the case, which we'll get to here, because this was my sort of timeline as this game was going on. Now, let me just preface this again, Wyatt, because this should serve, more than anything, the topic sentence here is, this should serve as a PSA to bettors, just another reminder that awards markets are not actual markets, right? These are not algorithms. These are not, a team is trailing in a baseball game 4-2. It's the bottom of the seventh. They're two out, but there's a runner at first and third. It's not mechanical like that. It's not even football. A team is down 9 points early fourth quarter, third and 13 at their own 12-yard line, right? There's an algorithmic output for all of those things. Awards markets are just awards markets. They're the bookmakers' own best reflection of what they think the market ought to be based on bets that they're getting, based on what the general market beyond them is getting. So remember now, Connor McDavid headed into this game seven was a cartoonish minus 2,500. Going into this game to win the Conn Smythe. Now, I had a tweet yesterday where I was going through this. At the end of the first period, again, when I had texted Will and Felica, I was like, he hadn't done anything. He was minus 800 at that point, at the end of the first period. By the time the third period started, he was down to minus 260, Connor McDavid. Barkov was actually the next short shot at plus 380, and Sergei Bobrovsky was plus 450. With 16:37 left in the final frame, Bobrovsky and Barkov had flipped in the market. McDavid was minus 240. Bobrovsky was plus 350. These numbers are at DraftKings. Barkov was plus 450. A little less than 2 minutes later, 14:41 left. McDavid minus 250. Bobrovsky plus 250. Barkov plus 550 at DraftKings. And then about a minute and a half later at 12:52 left in this one, McDavid's minus 200. Bobrovsky down to plus 180. Barkov now drifting minus 750. No need to mention his number anymore. With 751 left, DraftKings took that market down. So we went over to, I went over to Advocate Skirmish, as they call it. They still had theirs up. 702 left. This is right after, you may remember this sequence. There were two shots on goals from Evan Bouchard. There was one from Zach Hyman. It was just frenetic. McDavid now was down to minus 175. And Bobrovsky, with those saves, plus 120. This was the low mark for Sergei Bobrovsky in the betting markets to win the Conn Smythe, which is a full postseason award, mind you. But nonetheless, it was plus 120. Barkov, 11-1. It was not even worth mentioning. And then Advocate Skirmish took it down with just over 2 minutes left. With Bobrovsky under siege, it actually ticked a little bit in the other direction. McDavid was minus 260. Bobrovsky was plus 190. Of course, the winner ends up being, as we all know, Connor McDavid nonetheless. Didn't do anything, didn't score a point in Game 7, didn't in Game 6. And I get it, the breadth of his playoffs was unbelievable. Only Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux had more points in postseasons than did Connor McDavid. Gretzky had 47 in the 84-85 playoffs. Lemieux, 44 for the Penguins in the 90-91 playoffs. Oh, I remember that one well. Caps went down. Gretzky, 43. In the 87-88 postseason, and here Connor McDavid, 42 in the 2023-24 playoffs. Of course, McDavid did not, by the way, here it is, 8 goals, 34 assists, the 42 points I mentioned, 25 takeaways. He did not come out to accept the award, Gary Bettman, under a siege of boos when he mentioned that it was an offensive player, and the crowd immediately knew. Oh, we were joking how, like, oh, really couldn't get him out with his, like, locker room slippers, too, how awkward that would be. Thanks, appreciate the award.
How
See you
awkward
later.
Is that? It's like, oh, hey, you're the playoff MVP. Like, thank goodness he didn't come out.
No,
been,
it would have been awful.
Because then, like you said, the fans are just going to are booing him and whatnot.
But the main point that I want to sort of suggest here is, once again, it's a PSA for all of us, and this applies to football when we're talking football awards, when we talk about baseball awards, which we do a lot. People love them, not only on this show, but network-wide. That awards markets are just nebulous and are just like this, what we think, I will say we're too close to the sun, the example I use again. We never, ever mentioned Brandon Crawford in the 2021 NL MVP race, I believe it was. No, it may have been 2022. 2021 it was. And Brandon Crawford, I went to San Francisco. My buddy was like, hey, Brandon Crawford's winning MVP. Yeah, and I'm like, what is he talking about? Like, we're better as we know he's not even close to winning MVP. He ended up fourth, right? So, like, we are often way too way too mesmerized by the numbers that are in front of us. Here is the actual voting. Just to put a bow on this, it is a grand total of 17 voters for the Conn Smythe. Greg Wyshynski put this out today. 17 voters. This is across the ESPNs of the world and the Associated Presses of the world and other publications. Connor McDavid, first place on 16 of these 17 ballots. I'm going to just go to the phone here so I can see it more accurately. 16 of 17, Wyatt. First place votes. Sergei Bobrovsky gets the first place vote in the 17th. Ryan S. Clark from ESPN, not that Ryan Clark, but a different Ryan Clark, votes him number one. You know, and it's first, second, and third. Bobrovsky gets no second place votes on any of the 17 ballots and only 2 third place votes on third place. In other words, Bobrovsky wasn't even anywhere close to winning this thing. Like, it's not even close. McDavid won it in a landslide with Barkov having, 15 of the 17 second-place votes. One ballot, it should be noted, and I want to name a name here, Daniel Nugent Bowman of The Athletic. No, that's not correct. Pardon me, Daniel Nugent Bowman, for bringing your name up on this. Jim Matheson of Post Media. You're familiar with Post Media, aren't you? No? McDavid Hyman Bouchard. He had 3 Oilers, 1, 2, 3. What? What are we doing? We're betting on this stuff. It's ridiculous that we're betting on this stuff, is the point. And whatever the market is doing, oftentimes, and this is a great example, has no bearing whatsoever on anything. It's just there and means nothing. Drew Dinsick on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network. With our NFL betting guide dropping this Thursday, there has never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide, your secret weapon for the upcoming season, with in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and betting trends. You'll have all the tools you need to bet this season smarter. Plus, our experts share their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need to get ahead of the action. To get the guide, you got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, though. For a limited time, get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price, normally $240 a year. You can subscribe now, or you can subscribe now, either way, for just $199 with promo code ANG. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. Matt Humans, Adam Burke, Wes Reynolds, everybody does such a great job with these. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Use promo code ANG.
That is A-N-G. The letter A, the letter N, the letter G.
Okay. To get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199, reserve your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. We'll get this right.
That was a long read.
It was long.
You know, I'm focusing. I'm getting ready for Drew Dinsick. I'm so excited. I got to text him for the first time. I was like, I made it in this world.
You got to text Drew Dinsick for the first time. Did he respond to you?
He did. He did, in a timely manner, and I appreciate that.
It's like we're talking about a girl that you liked in your senior year in high school. Drew Dinsick, everybody, joins us from his lair in the LBC, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. And, of course, he's got not one but 2 podcasts, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with Jay Croucher. And Jay is awesome because he has an accent as well, an Australian accent. Drew, how you doing, man?
I am very well. Great time of year. NBA draft week.
Yes.
NBA Olympic trials wrapping up for swimming. I got my handicap all done for the swimming event. So, we're cooking. Tour de France starts this week. Really can't complain about the sports world right now.
No, not at all. I said yesterday, sneaky great time of year. And I know you love it, especially when you do this thing with your hands where you're like, I've got a secret way to do this. Okay, let's talk NBA draft first. We just passed, was it the 2-year anniversary of Paolo Banchero? I can't even keep up anymore.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago. Time flies.
Can you give us a brief oral history on that week or day? Like, keep it to like a minute, like for those who missed what happened that year.
Sure. I mean, it's deja vu all over again, in that it was a draft class where there was not certainty at the top. I mean, this is a really it's the NBA draft in general is just it's a different beast than the NFL, because There's like a 2 week turnaround here, and you know, the combine and the opportunity for these teams to figure out between knowing when they're picking in the lottery and actually making the pick is such a compressed schedule that you get this situation where you have years like that year with the Magic and this year with the Hawks, where there's huge amount of uncertainty as to who ultimately is going to be the pick at number one. And if there's uncertainty at pick number one, that means there's uncertainty everywhere. And I think in general, the you know, the people that were responsible for creating content around the NBA draft that year, all of them, you know, kind of looked at talent and need and Magic at the top and decided Jabari Smith. And then that got entrenched to where he was bet out to minus 700 to go first overall. And the weekend before, you know, that the what would have been, I guess, Saturday, Sunday, this past weekend before the draft, you know, there are a lot of, you know, kind of AAU friends and college program people that have access to these athletes, who come through the US system. And everyone who was connected to Jabari Smith was like, yeah, he had a really bad interview with the Magic. And it was like, wait a minute. Like, how can he be minus 700 to go first overall if his camp is like, yeah, we don't have a promise? The interview went poorly, and it was like, well, okay, let's start digging a little bit. And there was all kinds of questions swirling about Chet Holmgren's health, and his team was specifically trying to direct him to the Thunder second. And so you're like, okay, well, if the first guy didn't interview well, and the second guy doesn't want to go there, and the third guy is 20-1, this doesn't make sense at all. And so got every dime I could on Banchero to go first overall, and then it broke that way. And you know, the day of the draft, Wojnarowski, right before we went live talking about it, said, you know, it is increasingly likely that Jabari Smith will go first overall. And then the market, which had steamed heavily towards Banchero, largely because of, you know, a handful of bettors who were getting Banchero liquidity in, you know, just because it was uncertain, you know, that forced another correction where you had an additional opportunity to get money down on Banchero. And that's rare because, you know, this is a low liquidity pool. Betting the draft is kind of, it's a, you know, it's not a professional endeavor. You only get a couple of bites at the apple in a given year. You know, liquidity makes it such that, you know, if unless you have the nuts and you have an absurd price, you're not going to get rich doing this. So, you know, it's a funny marketplace. It's a funny market. And, you know, I mean, like, I don't know that ultimately there's going to be a huge amount of uncertainty at the top this year, but, you know, you're getting a lot of those same vibes. Certainly. I mean, we had a situation where 1 week ago, Alexander Sarr was the heavy favorite to go first overall, and now he's minus 800 to go second overall. So I guess that's decided. Okay, sure. And, you know, Rhys Sachet is, you know, your presumptive first overall pick right now, at least according to the offshore marketplace. And I don't know, I guess so. Maybe he's, you know, a clear top two talent, but maybe not. I mean, this is a really, really weak draft. And the team picking first overall, number one, was not expecting to be in this situation because the lottery was a surprise. And number two is just generally weak themselves. Like, they have a weak GM, you know, a guy who's not deeply entrenched in terms of the decision making there. And I think there are probably somewhere between 5 and 10 voices in the room with different opinions about what the Hawks should do with the first overall pick. And I don't think that there is or should necessarily be strong consensus about what to do as far as the future of the franchise, because you have Trae Young and DeJounte Murray who don't fit well, don't play well together. Trae Young, who I don't know that you're building a championship team around, and those guys still have value in terms of bringing in assets if you wanted to move them and start over with this, you know, this first overall pick as sort of the anchor of the future of the franchise. And, you know, it seems more likely to me there, at least from what I've heard, that you know, the Hawks are trying to figure out if they have a you know, a trade partner for Trae Young more than they are really even deciding who to take with this pick. So all of this happening, you know, 2 days before the draft is wild.
So if I say to you, what's your instinct? 1, 2, 3, what is your instinct at this moment?
Well, I mean, I think the most likely is probably Rishashe 1, SAR 2. And the only reason I say that is because SAR's team is, you know, sort of this is the same team that steered Chet Holmgren to Oklahoma City, one of the most, if not the most powerful rookie agent in the NBA, and Bill Duffy, who, you know, sees Washington as a better landing spot for SAR in terms of immediate opportunity. You know, particularly on the offensive side of things. And, you know, so it's to me, at least, SAR kind of stiffing the Hawks in the evaluation process, which is the, you know, the story going around, checks out, and that they're pointing him to number two checks out, which means number one, and sort of the reports that it's, you know, the Hawks are deciding between Rishashe and Klingon. Okay. You read that at face value. Fine. No, strong disagreement with that, but I will also say that that seems presumptive on the idea that they're not going to trade one of the guards, and that there's probably still a door open for a guy like Stephon Castle, who I know they have had in to do a workout and whose team is weirdly quiet. You know, I've taken some shots on Castle at just some absurd prices, just in case we have a repeat of history here where, you know, a guy who, you know, is an elite point of attack defender and, you know, is kind of has a lot of the fingerprints of a Jaylen Brown who just won your finals MVP, you know, is coming into this process and being a little bit underrated. He's enormous, by the way. He's 6'7" as far as a point guard goes. That's like absolutely ideal size wise for today's style of a defense in the NBA. And I think in general, I'm fine taking on a project like that as far as trying to get him to be a better shooter and contributor offensively. So we'll see if ultimately there's any legs there. But that's the only kind of weird, absurd shot I've taken in that market.
Yeah, not to interrupt, but as we approach the wall here. So when you say you've taken some weird shots on Castle, and I too have interpreted that as you took him number one, you took him at other numbers too early.
Oh, I only took him first overall at 100-1.
100-1, number one. Okay. Wow. All right. Given the Trae Young swirl that you're talking about, any other bet that you still like that's out there that you would say, yeah, bet this?
I've heard a lot of rumbling that Dalton Knecht is going to go in the top seven. So I played his under pretty heavily. That's actually going to decide my draft night one way or the other, at least as it stands right now.
Okay. Dalton Knecht, who I know before the tournament, I was thinking we were going to have a Danny Manning and the Miracles kind of run for Dalton Knecht out of Tennessee. Drew said in the top seven, so heavily on the under on Dalton Knecht. As the draft approaches tomorrow night, we'll put a bow on that on the other side. We'll also talk about the things that Drew just mentioned. Tour de France. He'll give us a name. We won't know who it is, but we'll just listen to him. And then Olympics, because I know he is just entrenched in that, swimming and beyond. It's a numbers game at VSiN. Drew coming back. The Sports Betting Network. Don't forget to check out our website, vsin.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides. It's all there on the front page today. Oh, this is good. Steve Mackinnon on the MLB bullpen betting system that he's got. Update. He's got an MLB bullpen betting system update yielding a massive week, it says. I'll actually dive into that after the show. Tennis predictions from our buddy Zach Cohen, who will join Drew and I for the Beating the Book tennis pod on Thursday. By the way, Sebastian Offner gets it done. If we can get Siniakova home, that would be great. Also on the website, though, a whole bunch of football stuff. Matt Eumanns on college hoops. And Zach actually looks ahead to the NBA championship odds next year. All of that at vsin.com. Check it out. So Wyatt Tom check in for Kelly Bidlin. You okay, man? We haven't heard enough from you.
You know, it just... What was that? You caught me. Not ready.
I'm sorry. Listen, Wyatt was working at his family's hardware store this past week.
Yes.
In
Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. Yeah, where in Wisconsin?
Waukesha, Wisconsin, which is about 20 minutes to the west of Milwaukee.
Okay.
And then he has another one in Delavan, which is like on the Wisconsin-Illinois border.
Where did you grow up?
Right here in Vegas.
Oh, you grew up here?
Oh, yeah, born and
raised. That's right. So you are a UNLV. Wyatt, by the way, is not just some random guy that we picked up off the street. Wyatt does UNLV women's basketball play-by-play, right?
Yep, that is the big one, along with softball, volleyball, and men's and women's soccer.
You do it all.
I try to do it all. Try to stay busy.
So your aspiration is to be a big-time play-by-play guy?
Oh, yeah. Try to do it, you know, full-time. You know, I just enjoy it. I enjoy telling a story, no matter where it is, and it's just been a lot of fun. You know, Gil, Well, the thing that I really enjoy the most is when parents come up to me and go, hey, I'm so-and-so's daughter, son. I really enjoy listening to the games. You guys, you make it so much fun for us.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just love it. Like, at that level, I know my audience is it's very specific. People are tuning in for a reason.
Do you have a secret rivalry with Ben Wilson that we should know about?
Never. Well, he's a fellow Wisconsin. Well, I'm just not curious. A Wisconsinite, but he's a fellow Packer fan and Bucks fan, so we have a lot of love for each other.
Okay. Let's just try to sow rivalry there. Ben, nicest guy in the world. You, nicest guy in the world. May the both of you be spectacularly successful. And thanks for slumming with me this morning. I appreciate it.
Hey, you know.
Yeah. Paul Sporer has been doing that for the better part of a decade, more than a decade with me, both in radio and podcast form. I've known him since he was, well, I don't know what, 9 years old? It's Paul Sporer, everybody. At Sporer on Twitter. Works at FanGraphs. Sleeper in the Bus, the name of the podcast, comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm doing very well, Gil. Thanks for having me on.
Let's do this reverse. Let's start with DFS. Can I throw you that curveball? Have you taken a look? No, I haven't done any DFS.
Why did you do that to me?
I'm sorry.
You give me all these little ones to run down. No, I really haven't looked at the board. I was focused on all the ones
season
that we were going to run down today.
Okay, so let's do season long. So Paul has grabbed the DraftKings app, and he has grabbed it with both of his hands, and he's like, oh, there's stuff here. How many bets do you think you would recommend on today's show, Paul? What's coming up here in the next couple segments?
I mean, I've got a lot.
Okay.
I've got a lot of interest here on different things and of varying levels. You know, I'm always down to point out, like, hey, this one isn't crazy hot. This is more of a smaller move I would make. Other words, I'm going to be more aggressive on. So, and there's going to be a through line on a particular team that I've just had a tough time quitting, and now they're starting to show some signs.
Okay. Well, let's. He's taking a swig from his thermos, so he's ready to go. I don't know what's in there. He won't tell us. Water.
It's just water.
Sure, water, sure. All right, start where you'd like to, and we'll go from there. What's your first one?
We'll go in the order that you listed them. Okay. That's the order I went in there, starting with the team futures there. And on the World Series, you know, there's a few teams I do like. In general, these are not my favorites to get that far ahead of it. I'm going to always be careful with this. But when I'm looking at it, you know, there's some teams that jump out on the favorites end. I still think Baltimore's a bit underpriced at plus 850. You know, they're fifth on the board. I think they're better than the fifth best team. I think they're probably around the second. I don't know that I have any team definitively, unquestionably better than Baltimore either. I also believe that they're firmly going to make a strong move for pitching. They just have too much talent. Not too much. You never have too much talent. But they have so much overflowing talent that they can make a move similar to the Burns one where it doesn't even really dent them. And that's not to say that DL Hall and Joey Ortiz are not two nice pieces that Milwaukee got. And we've seen what Milwaukee's doing with Ortiz. Hall's hurt right now. But I think the Orioles will make another big move. Plus 850, they're fifth on the board there. Then you start to get in a little bit of you know, the deeper cuts there. And I'm going to go with a Texas two-step. And I'm not a homer. I do live in Texas, but I'm a Tigers fan for those that don't know. But I like both Texas ball clubs right now, Houston at plus 2,200 and the Rangers at plus 7,500. Both teams have gone through some stuff this year and had some issues. And neither is, you know, firm ground right now. They're both sub 500. But I really like both those clubs. Only the Mariners recently kind of ran away from them a little bit, but none of the other teams, obviously the Angels and the A's, they're not going to do anything about it, take advantage of it. But even the rest of the American League didn't really take full advantage and bury these two ball clubs. And I really like where they stand, and I think both will be aggressive at the deadline as well. So Houston plus 2,200, Texas plus 7,500. I'm surprised they haven't changed. They've been hot of late, and that's the team that I'm going to be going with throughout. I like them for the league. For the American League, plus 3,500, and for the division, plus 750. I'm on Texas all the way. What they had to do was survive to about this point, and now they're adding pieces almost weekly, right? We just saw Scherzer come back. You know, they'll be adding pieces just from their injuries, let alone if they go out and make moves, which I would believe that they will. As the defending champs, they want to solidify that team. So even though they haven't looked great this year, I've had a hard time ever really quitting Texas. So that's where I'm at on that. Do you want to react to any of that or keep going?
Just making sure we understand. So for Texas, you're doing it throughout. You're doing division, league, and World Series. But for the Astros and the Orioles, you sticking only to World Series as a good play, as you think?
And I like World Series for both of them. And then I don't mind the league on Houston. Now, they're plus 1,100 to Texas's plus 3,500. So it's obviously much better to go on Texas there from a number standpoint of what you're getting. But I do like this Houston club, too. I like both Texas teams. I understand if you don't want to stack on both there, and you know, you're going to have conflicting bets at some point. But if you don't have a dead lean to one or the other and you kind of want to spread it out a little bit, I think both clubs, they're just not ready to, I mean, Houston's not ready to be buried the way people want them to be buried.
Yeah.
And Texas, of course, is just kind of getting going. So I think that they sputtered a little bit out of the gate, which could have been expected with the injuries that they were suffering. And now as they add these pieces back, plus any moves they make, plus Wyatt Langford maybe starting to turn a corner, we'll see if they can get Evan Carter back healthy and going well. I like that Texas ball club quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, Paul, but I got Houston 25-1, most wins in June. I'm pumped. They're alive.
I love it.
They're alive. I love it.
They're absolutely playing some good ball right now. Then as we continue on, so nothing else on the World Series. League in the NL, none of them jump out because a lot of them, those favorites are up there. They make sense. I get it. Those are probably the plays that you really want to focus on. But if I want to get a little bit wild with it, you know that dating back, what now, 3-4 years at this point, I can't quit this Padres team. They're such a talented bunch. They're frustrating as can be. And I know Tatis just got hurt, but they're playing better of late. I think Darvish is back today. They're also a team that has shown that they're not going to let this window close. You know, they got 5-6 more trades in the barrel with the White Sox. I'm sure of it. They can figure out a few more things to pillage from that ball club. I'm only partially joking. I wouldn't be surprised if they went back to them to try to get Eric Fetty and or Garrett Crochet. So I like that Padres team as a live underdog in the NL. And then for divisions, KC is interesting in the AL Central. I know that they've fallen on some hard times recently. I think they're out of the playoff picture for the first time since like April 5th or something around there. It's been a while, but they're still 42-37. They're a good ball club, plus 750. I think that's just going to be a really hard fought division. I respect what the Guardians are doing. I'm not off of them completely, but I think the Royals are going to push. Excuse me. And then the Pirates. They're a big-time dog, plus 3,000 right now. But they have two aces, Gil. And I know Jared Jones isn't pitching at his best right now, but I think that's more of just kind of rookie settling than him being figured out. In fact, he bounced back with a big gem against the Rockies recently. Against the Rays after getting hit by the Rockies in Colorado, which even though the Rockies stink this year, I'm never going to hold it too hard against the guy that gets beat up in Colorado. So they've got two aces. If they can figure out any hitting in Pittsburgh, I don't see any reason that they can't storm the castle and take down this Brewers club. A Brewers club I like too. So again, this isn't anti-Brewers so much as it is pro-Pirates. So that's where I'm at on the teams there. Like I said, add the Padres to the league with the two Texas teams. And then the division teams of interest are the Rangers, Royals, and then the Pirates as a super long shot.
All right, the Pirates to win the NL Central. Did they just take that down? No, there it is. Pirates to win the NL Central. Keep in mind, the Pirates are 8.5 back. They're 4 games below 500. Yep. They are 30-1 right now to win that division. And then some of your other bets we were talking about with the Rangers, we pointed out with the Rangers every which way. Rangers to win the American League West are plus 750. Astros, by the way, are an anemic plus 240. So you're not getting much of a number there. But with the Rangers...
They've been adjusted to. I'm surprised the Rangers haven't really been yet.
Yeah.
With their recent play.
Rangers to win the American League 35-1 and to win the whole dealio to be back-to-back champs. The Rangers are 75-1. Some of the numbers that we're talking about. That Pirates one is a very interesting call in what is a very fluid NL Central with the Cardinals having a great month of baseball.
Absolutely.
And the team that I thought was going to be really good, the Cubs, kind of floundering, kind of just meh at this point. Paul's got a lot more season-long baseball thoughts beyond the markets we just discussed. That's on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. At Maracanada, the barrage in Spanish, right here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander and Wyatt Tomchak. Don't forget, release day, NFL Guide release day, Thursday. Sign up now, vsin.com/subscribe. We're pumped. We're pumped for this. We are, I don't know, what would you say this is, 20 feet away, 25 feet away from a Sigma Derby machine here at the D. And there are five people gathered around, and this one lady was just going ballistic, hoping number three would get there. And we were waiting, Wyatt and I, for the result of this. And the only way, because we had our headphones on, we didn't know what happened. But the only way we know is that she went. So I guess she lost. Doggone it.
Have you ever played it before?
Hell no.
No?
Oh, you?
Okay. No. I mean.
It's fun for the whole family, I'm told. No. We Kelly has a story though. When he saw them cleaning the insides, the innards of the Sigma Derby machine, and Kelly wanted to take a photo of it, and the guy who was cleaning it was like, "Oh no, you can't take a photo."
Really?
Oh yeah, it's like a big thing.
Because that's the story is that this is the only one left in the state of Nevada, right?
I think the only of the originals.
Of the originals,
yes.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch of knockoff later generation ones, but of the originals, I think that's the only one. Oh, I want to say Fortenbaugh. Joe Fortenbaugh might have purchased one of the originals and has it as his. I think, I don't know if it's true. I have to ask him. Does he have one at his house? Like, I'm sure his wife is like, "Joe, can you move the Sigma Derby machine out of here? We have kids."
Oh, I would love to come over to the house. What are you doing?
Playing Sigma Derby. Paul Spohr, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Okay, good flavor there for all of your team bets. Again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, he comes to us. You liked a lot of the player stuff as well.
Yeah, I got some player stuff that is of note. And, you know, I love doing this. We talk about these every year, really, that we've been doing stuff. And the evolution of the awards over the season is always fascinating, right? We start talking about MVP and Cy Young in April, which, let's be honest, is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But it's fun, right? It's why we enjoy sports. Like, oh, my God, what if this guy with this hot April ends up being the guy? And we know a lot of it's narrative-driven, too. Maybe it shouldn't be as much. Like, you know, some of the April-May stuff can be forgotten for a great story down the stretch. But I got some guys of note here, and we'll start with the MVP. And I like a couple of the longer shot guys here. And one of my favorites is on the O's with Adley Rutschman. And, you know, that's a guy that, like, is team leader through and through, calling him a switch-hitting posy since he's come up. Like, the second, honestly, even before that, at Oregon State, I was like, oh, this guy is just, like, switch-hitting posy, has everything, and doesn't have a super, super standout skill when it comes to his offense, like, one thing that carries him, just does everything very well. Great catcher, team leader. The narrative is there. The Orioles, they're on the rise. The stats are there, too. You need the stats to go with it. But everything's going well for Adley Rutschman. I think he could have a huge summer, put himself in that MVP candidacy. I like him at 80 to 1. Similarly, though, Jordan Alvarez, you know, another great player. Now, it's a little bit tougher for him as essentially a DH, but he is such an amazing hitter. I mean, this guy has, you know, 15 homers in his back pocket any given month. Right. When he's dialed in, you're not going to be surprised if he's dropping double digit homers. So I think Alvarez at 80 to 1 as well is interesting for the MVP. So those are my two MVPs. Again, do you want me to go through them all or stop?
I was just going to say, Paul said he meant Jordan Alvarez. It sort of sounded like Jordan Alvarez. Some people
said Jordan. I'm sorry. That is actually how it's pronounced. But I know everyone calls him Jordan. I will go with that.
I just didn't want people to be confused.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. But his actual name is Jordan. Just so we're clear, but he let everyone call him Jordan. But anyway, that is who I'm talking about. And they're both at 80 to 1 there, Adley and Alvarez. Actually, I'm not seeing Adley on the board that's being listed there, but
Adley's 80 to 1. He's right there, below Jordan.
Yep. Oh, yeah, right there. Sorry. Okay, so now going to the Cy Young, I got a few candidates I like, two in the NL, one in the American League. And again, I think this is even more wide open than the MVP stuff. You can really turn your Cy Young candidacy with like an amazing month because it can be so high impact with 5-6 starts, and it can really kind of pivot you. And I think one team that you kind of casually mentioned coming out of the or going into the break last time was the Cardinals. Their ace is back and looking amazing. Sonny Gray missed some time at the beginning of the year, but he has not missed a beat since returning. 281 ERA, 095 WHIP. Just an excellent pitcher. You know, reached 32 starts last year. Will fall a bit short of that this year because of some of the time missed. But we know that you don't have to be putting up big 200 plus inning type seasons anymore. If you've got the skills in 180 something innings, that can get it done. He's interesting at 16 to 1. A little bit deeper though. Aaron Nola, 35 to 1. I know Zach Wheeler gets more of the headlines over there, and I totally get it. He is the true ace, and Nola is kind of his Robin. But sometimes Robin gets a Cy Young, and I wouldn't be surprised if he goes on a run. Now, we know he can have these blow-up starts. What Nola's going to have to do over the summer is avoid those dotted, you know, 6 earned run, 7 earned run disasters that seem to always mix in over the course of his seasons, once every 10 starts, but it can erase 3 or 4 goodies. He just got clobbered in Boston recently for 8 earnings. That's got to be the last one of those for Nola to do it, but he's got the skills. He's got the talent. He's got the reputation as being a great starter as well. And then in the American League, my guy, was the guy I picked coming into the year. I'm sticking with him. It's another Seattle guy. I was on the Luis Castillo train last year. This year I've pivoted to George Kirby, and I realize that he's a bit behind Logan Gilbert right now. And I think they're both very similar, but I'm just going to take the guy at a better price because I think Kirby's every bit as good as Gilbert. I love Gilbert as well, but I think Kirby's best pitching could be ahead of him, and he could make a big run, especially if Seattle ends up winning that AL West. So those are my Cy Youngs, Sonny Gray, Aaron Nola, and George Kirby at 50-1.
Paul, I have a question for you. Obviously, the most fascinating pitcher in all of baseball is Paul Skenes. Correct. Is there a chance that he can win the NL Cy Young, or do you think that they're just going to give him the NL Rookie of the Year?
They will probably give him the Rookie of the Year to kind of satiate, giving him the Cy Young. But there is a world where he just kind of deserves it. And if they really don't put any major restrictions on him, and I'm not sure that they should, if they're contending, if they can actually get themselves back into full contention where pushing Paul Skenes out there 6-7 innings past maybe a dead limit that they had originally wanted in the sake of chasing playoffs would make sense, then yes, I think he could push all the way into it. It will be tough, and they will have the Rookie of the Year to kind of give him something, and we've seen that before, but I don't rule it out, and he is interesting. He's too short of a shot for Rookie of the Year, but if you really want to get in on some Skenes action, I think that's where you would go, is jump into the Cy Young pool and see if you can get a little decent number there and just hope that they don't shut him down at all.
Also, check on whether Robin from Batman and Robin ever won a Cy Young, because I'm pretty sure Paul said he did. I'm pretty sure that's what
happened. Yeah. I think he did.
Was that it for the awards, or was that anything else you wanted to? That's it?
No, I got more. How much time I got?
You got 3 minutes. You got time. Go ahead.
All right. So, Rookie of the Year, I mentioned Paul Skenes. So, you're going super long shots the rest of the way here. But there is a world where they shut him down, you know, overly quick, and they play it too tight on him, or they just completely fall out of contention, so they want to shut him down and open up the door. It's possible. Again, Skenes is the favorite. We're going quarter unit, half unit type stuff here. But I like Mason Winn, a little bit more St. Louis love here with some awards. Mason Winn is awesome. True legit shortstop, meaning he can pick it, play the defense brilliantly. Some of his throws are unbelievable, but also having a good hitting season so far. 298, 341, 433 on the slash line, 4 homers, 8 steals. So, you know, throws in some of the fantasy categories, if you will, which do play in MVP votes. So if he can put up a nice double-double, which is at least 10 homers and steals with a great 300 or so batting average and a ton of war from defense and base running, if Skenes opens the door, I think somebody like Mason Winn could sneak in. But then in the American League, as more of a legitimate bet as opposed to a long shot bet, I like David Hamilton. Now, a little bit of bias. He's a Longhorn. I'm a Longhorn myself. And I love Luis Gil. He, too, would have to kind of open the door. So I guess it is a little bit more long shotty than I originally said there. But I love what David Hamilton's doing. And, you know, the Red Sox are in this right now. They're 42-36. David Hamilton could be a big part of any sort of playoff run that they might make. He's playing some decent enough defense to stick it short. He's been a stolen base god with 21 on 22 attempts, hitting .282, and has a little bit of punch, already 5 homers in 54 games. So David Hamilton at 25-1 for the AL Rookie of the Year is very interesting. Do you have any thoughts on those two rookies of the year?
No, I'm just going to say Mason Winn also 25-1 and David Hamilton 25-1 in their respective award categories. Yes. 90 seconds. You got more.
All right. Juan Soto, over 35.5 homers. I just love Juan Soto. He's a god. Luis Gil, over 172.5 strikeouts. They said that they're not going to limit him. And so if they're not going to limit him and let him pitch all year, there's a great shot for him to get that. Now, that is the short shot to bet the over, but I do like him, and I love everything Luis Gil is doing. Home run leader, long shot, Juan Soto, 80-1. Again, I just love Juan Soto. I think he's a god. Number one seed, Baltimore Orioles, plus like 310 or something. It's not a great number, but I'm looking for something of a long shot there outside of like the Dodgers. And I forget who the AL top dog was, the Yankees, obviously. And then World Series division winner, AL West. I like the two Texas teams and Seattle. If they can get at least two teams in, I like my chances there.
Orioles plus 310 to be the number one seed.
Correct.
By the way, DraftKings only has the number one seed listed right now, but oftentimes they will pop up different seeds like 2 through 6. Oftentimes 4, 5, 6 can provide a lot of great betting value.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be much more fun. It could also get you messed up because I know Will Hill and I were talking about the Mets the other day, and he was like, should I take the Mets number 6 seed? And I was like, just take it to make the playoffs, because if they end up 4 or 5, you'll get like super
upset
at yourself. Yeah. So, but they are interesting markets as well. Paul, well done. Two solid segments of bets. My man, appreciate it.
Thanks. Paul, thanks so much for having me on. I'll talk to y'all next week.
You too. Paul Sporer, at Sporer. on Twitter. We've done all we can do. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.